It's Author State, the show where journalists talk journalism, coming to you from 2SER in Sydney on Gadigal lands of the Eora Nation, right across Australia, on the Community Radio Network and directly to your device across the globe via podcast. My name's Jessica Smalley. Coming up on the show today, we'll be discussing the new not-for-profit organisation Media Diversity Australia that seeks to promote balanced representation in Australian media. It's co-founded by journalists Isabel Lowe and Antoinette Latouf. And if opposition leader Bill Shorten's latest advert featuring an all-white cast is a reflection of Australia's diversity, then we've got plenty to talk about on today's podcast. Joining me in the studio is Communications Director for Media Diversity Australia and ABC journalist Kai Chow. How are you?
Very good, Jess. How are you?
I'm good. What was the catalyst for Media Diversity Australia?
So you've mentioned our two founders, Antoinette and Isabel, and they both used to work at the ABC back in its fledgling ABC News 24 days. And at the time, there were quite a few journalists who had just started up that were from a non-English speaking background or certainly from a ethnic heritage that wasn't Caucasian. And what they realised, Isabel and Antoinette, was a few years later that not many of these people seem to have stuck around at the ABC. And so they actually spoke to some of these people about why they had moved on from news. And they thought they really had something here. They tried to pitch the story a few times, and when it didn't seem to get much traction, they realised, you know what, why don't we just start an organisation? And they knocked on my door, as well as the doors of a couple of other people, including Mark Fennell and Osman Faruqi, and here we are.
Media companies like The Guardian is partnered with Indigenous X, and BuzzFeed's reputable coverage of Indigenous affairs are making efforts to diversify their newsrooms, stories and readership. Why do we need then Media Diversity Australia?
Sure. Well, look, I mean, you know, those two initiatives, like they sound great and I'll be looking forward to see how they go. What we have noticed, however, is that many organisations have been talking about diversity, but very few have achieved it. So, for example, the organisation I work for at the ABC, I look around our news floor on the news and current affairs area, and I'm one of the only people there that's of a non-English speaking background, even though I was born here myself. I think there was one other Asian girl and she just left. So it's a little bit, I think it's safe to say that there is still some work to do, but not just that. I think the approach that many organisations are taking to diversity isn't necessarily working. So, for example, you know, the ABC has reserved spots for Indigenous journalists in their scholarship program, sorry, in their cadetship program. However, they do seem to struggle to retain those staff. So, I think that an organisation like Media Diversity is one that is able to take a fresh approach to diversity. And having worked a lot in corporate diversity myself, or certainly been exposed and covered it as a business journalist, I think that a fresh approach is going to be important, because many existing diversity movements, they sometimes do have, I suppose you could say, a more adversarial approach, and sometimes that makes it easy for them to be dismissed by, you know, large network organisations. You know, it's very difficult to meet with management suddenly, for example, and I think that Media Diversity Australia is going to add a fresh approach of a collaborative, positive approach of working with these organisations, and that, because we want everyone to be in on this, including commercial news networks, not just the usual suspects of, say, the ABC and SBS.
A 2016 report from ABC, 12% of content makers were culturally diverse and 6% had disabilities. You've been a journalist for over a decade. From your experience, how have you seen diversity in media change?
Slowly, Jess. You know, I'm still fairly sure that I am the first Chinese guy to be in Australian television news, as a reporter anyway. I haven't really seen that change all that much since then. I think we have seen a few more, we have seen a few people from a non-Anglo background appear on TV, in particularly ABC's News 24 program, programming, for example. However, what you'll find is that once you get below that line of presenters, it's actually still, you know, very much not a diverse workforce. And then when you even turn to journalism schools, for example, I think the numbers of people from a non-white background are climbing in a very slow pace.
Mm. And you've worked across different stations. How does diversity in the newsroom affect the stories being made?
Well, for the same reason that, let's put it this way, our different cultures give us a different perspective, you know, whether it's from, you know, if you're from an Anglo-Saxon background, the particular ways you've grown up, the communities you grow in will give you a particular way of looking at stories. And therefore, people from a totally different country, I mean, if you look at the challenges that we have in, for example, in often communicating between cultures. So it can only be an advantage if you actually have someone like that working for your organisation and be able to understand other cultures better. So in more concrete terms, that means you're more likely to have accuracy in your stories, particularly ones that are about different cultures and ones that in particular cover international news. I mean, you know, I can think of examples where we've had colleagues in the newsrooms that have struggled with even just the pronunciations of you know, overseas politicians, for example, and it's just embarrassing, right? Because like it or not, all Australians, regardless of background, consume some kind of media.
A report last year identified the average media worker as a young white male from Sydney's inner suburbs. What do you think is holding back a more diverse and accurate reflection of Sydney in our media?
So, look, you know, I think it's, you know, what's holding back diversity in general, there's a few different factors. Certainly one of them is the culture of newsrooms themselves. They've always been, like many industries, they've always been dominated by people from a Anglo background. And our natural human inclination, especially in the fast-paced world of broadcast journalism, for example, is to hire our own. It's to work with our own. We're more comfortable with our own. And especially in a time-pressured environment where it's often felt that communication is very important, then I think that certainly at least subconsciously, if not consciously, creeps into hiring decisions as well as promotion decisions, for example. And also, you know, the culture of those kind of newsrooms tends to be very loud. It rewards the extroverts. And so this is why it's, and many people from a non-English speaking background, perhaps because of language barriers or perhaps because of cultural reasons, are a little bit more, are a little bit more, I wouldn't say introverted, but they may not be as loud. Now, it's okay for me because despite being from a Chinese background, I'm quite loud. However, I know for many of my peers in the, say, the Chinese community, that just simply isn't the case. So I think there is some reluctance amongst people from a, you know, from people of certain cultural backgrounds to be noisy, and it doesn't fit necessarily the culture of a modern newsroom in many ways. And so I think there's scope there to change the way that we perhaps run our newsrooms in the sense that, you know, how do I put this? You know, it's not always one that has to reward the alpha personalities in the newsroom. I think if we can be a little bit more open-minded about what quieter people bring, then we're all going to be better off. It's, again, just simply a different perspective rather than just those who always want to talk. So I think also there's also the challenge of many people from migrant communities, for example. They come from cultures that reward stability and, you know, financial security. And if there's one profession that doesn't really seem to do that at the moment, it would be journalism. Mm. And so there is a reluctance by many people to stick their necks out, so to speak, from migrant backgrounds. Now, you could argue, well, look, you know, it's up to them to, you know what? This is the nature of the industry. You've got to be able to adapt to it. And to some extent, that is true. And that's why I think, you know, it's really important to have this approach to diversity that is collaborative, that says we are all in this together, and that it is not just up to the organization, it's also up to those from a, you know, from the ethnic communities as well, to try to meet each other halfway.
You're listening to Fourth Estate. I'm joined in the studio with Communications Director for Media Diversity Australia and ABC journalist Kai Chow. Australians from non-English speaking backgrounds are often come from a lower socioeconomic background. Today, it's increasingly difficult to enter journalism without having to do hours of unpaid work, which a lot of these kids simply can't afford to do. Do you think media internships need to be rethought?
Look, I mean, I think that these days, the idea that people from a non-English speaking background come from a lower socioeconomic background isn't necessarily the case. I know certainly growing up in the Chinese community, where many people go into law and medicine, their incomes can actually often be higher than the average Australian. So I don't think it's necessarily a lack of money, but I would say that stability of career is a deterrent, right? So if you told many migrant parents, for example, that you wanted to go into an unstable career such as journalism, they'd be very much against it. And I think there is a very strong ethos, even amongst the first and second generation of children born here, of going into something that is reasonably secure and well-paying. So I do think in that sense, the fact that journalism can be very low-paid or perhaps not at all can be a barrier, but I'm not sure if it affects people from a non-English speaking background any more than, you know, those, you know, say, who come from out west and are from a white background and are also quite poor.
At the time of this recording, Fairfax staff members are on a week-long strike. Media companies are more concerned by profit margins and, in that case, more inclined to keep to the rhythm of what they know will sell. How much is the issue of diversity a managerial fault? What other factors are at play here?
Look, while I don't want to give management a free pass on this, you know, I do want to emphasise, and certainly at Media Diversity Australia, we really do believe that the issue of diversity and fixing the representation of people from a non-English speaking background and from different cultural backgrounds is a shared one. It is not solely the fault of management. Now, of course, management has an important role in setting the tone. And, you know, there's no doubt that if management were to send a directive down saying, look, we want to start, you know, having guests from different backgrounds besides just the usual, then reporters will generally snap to it, right? However, I think it's wrong just to point the finger at management of news organisations alone. It's these the sentiments are also reflected by many young journalists, journalists who are in the middle management ranks and so forth. And so, you know, again, I just want to emphasise that it's really up to all of us to play our role in addressing this problem. It isn't just, you know, the fault of management. And certainly at Media Diversity Australia, we want to make clear that we want to work with people. We think that a lot of managers would love to fix this problem in their newsrooms. I'm pretty sure some of them are a bit embarrassed by the lack of diversity that they have there. And I know that. I mean, I've spoken to some and often they're probing. They just say, yeah, we'd love to hire them, but where are they? You know, it's like they would clearly like to perhaps shift some of the responsibility back to people from the ethnic communities. And as I said, they too have their role to play. But I think that, you know, again, as I mentioned to you before, if you're hiring the staff but you're not keeping them, then it's clearly not only the responsibility of the ethnic communities to provide, you know, more feeder stock, so to speak, for your journalism corps.
When Waleed Ali joined the project and Rebecca Madden joined the AFL Footy Show, views went up. People like feeling included, so it's no surprise it doesn't harm ratings. So then why do commercial stations perform so terribly when it comes to diversity?
Well, I mean, you mentioned that ratings go up. And look, this is one of the challenges for media diversity that we absolutely want to take on. And that is, we want to be able to put forward evidence. We want to be able to prove, first of all, that there is an issue. And secondly, that there are benefits to being of having a diverse presenting corps, and not just presenting corps, but also the people that make content as well. And until you do that, you will look like you're just, you know, just another lobby group that wants to be politically correct. And again, that tends to get you quite quickly dismissed, unfortunately. In terms of commercial stations, look, to be honest, Jess, I think we maybe need to dispel this myth that the commercial stations are the only ones that have a diversity problem. I think, for example, so at SBS, unsurprisingly, given its charter, it does have quite a diverse workforce in both its presenters and also its back office. But I can tell you, I mean, I've worked at Radio National, where I was, you know, let's put it this way, I was certainly the only Asian person at the staff meetings of quite a lot of people. There were dozens of people there. I've mentioned before on the News Forum, one of the only ones who's, you know, from a non-white background. I mean, and, you know, I think there are, and it's well known that many of the other flagship programs for public broadcasters, people from a non-English speaking background haven't necessarily been they haven't been well represented. I think you'd actually be surprised at how the commercial stations, while they certainly do, you know, if you look at their tables at the Logies, you know, they certainly are very blonde and white. However, you will find that many of them have shown potential to hire diversely because it simply pays. For example, I think reality shows in cooking like MasterChef and My Kitchen Rules have had great diversity. They don't just have diversity of look, they have diversity of accent as well. And that's quite simply because it'd be pretty boring if everyone just served Mod Oz, right? I mean, Australia's love for food has pushed that. It's made it profitable for them to do that, and that's why they've done it. At where I started in television at Sky News, I was put on air pretty quickly, right? And that's a commercial broadcaster, from the News Corp family. And I was succeeded as a reporter in my position by an Indian, Nigel Freitas. So I think that commercial stations, you know, certainly they're not perfect, but they have shown flashes. And by the same token, public broadcasters, while they have done well in some areas, if you look at some others, such as, for example, radio at the ABC, then you may find diversity isn't quite as present there.
Fourth Estate makes a conscious effort to invite a diverse background of journalists, but sometimes it's not always achievable, and in some cases we invite journalists from diverse backgrounds on more than once. Is this just simply something we have to try harder with, or is it something else?
Look, as a journalist myself, and we've talked about this, at Media Diversity Australia, a lot of us do work in news and current affairs, and we totally understand, especially when you're under a time frame, that it can sometimes be easy to go for the people who you know will drop everything and come on. And we're certainly aware of that. So what I would say is, first of all, Media Diversity Australia is looking to build a talent hub, a talent database of diverse talent, because we are aware, even though many people may be a little bit embarrassed to admit it, that many people just simply don't know that many people from a non-Anglo background, including amongst their talent. See, many talents often start off as I mentioned, as those that have always been around, right? So if you always go with who's always been around, then obviously nothing will change. So we want to build a database. It's one of the things that, for example, we've applied for a Walkley Innovation Grant in. And we think that if we're able to build a database because we have the context, because we are members of ethnic communities, and as journalists, we have a sense of whether they would be decent media talent, then that will certainly help a lot of reporters, I think, that are looking to broaden the kind of people they ask onto their programs. I would look in terms of, you know, trying harder. Well, of course, that's always something you can strive for. When I look at the place where I used to work, the Sky News Business Channel, for example, I see they often have people now of a non-English speaking background on there, quite simply because a lot of people in finance and economics now are from a non-English speaking background. Many of the companies behind them, for example, are aware of the importance of showing that they have a diverse workforce. And diversity isn't a nebulous concept that doesn't seem to really have much benefit in its own. I mean, you've got to understand that what these companies are doing, for a profitable motive, is showing that they are representative of their customer base, right? They are representative of Australia. It's an accuracy thing. It's not a political correctness thing.
Leadership positions in media are dominated by people from Anglo backgrounds. This has been given as one of the reasons why Australia media is so white. A TV ad from Labor came out Monday with the slogan, "Employ Australians First," with a group of people standing beside opposition leader Bill Shorten. They were all white. Shorten has since come out and said it was an oversight. That won't happen again. But do you think it's a simple mistake or part of a larger problem?
Well, I know there was a little bit of debate. I think there was a single brunette who was amongst that cast member, and there was some debate as to whether she was an Asian, half Asian, or not Asian. However, overall, you're right. However, I tend not to think there are many mistakes made when you're paying for an expensive TVC. I think there's two things, there are two potential options, right? The first is that politics, perhaps a bit like media, has been a little bit insular. Many of the people there may not know that many people from a non-Anglo background. Politics is generally still dominated by people from an Anglo background, and perhaps for many of the same reasons media is, including the reluctance of people from migrant communities to go into a highly public position. I would say that that then might lead them to honestly think that, hey, you know, in terms of targeting Australian citizens, that's what they look like. And they maybe just simply didn't even notice that there were people there, that there was no one there from a non-white background or other than the young brunette lady. Now, that's one option. The other is perhaps a little bit less positive, which is that they knew full well what they were doing. And that they, you know, I think ever since I remembered after Donald Trump had that shock win in the US presidential election, almost the next day, Bill Shorten was on the front foot saying, look, we're all about putting Australian jobs first. So he was clearly keen to avoid the fate of Hillary Clinton. And so I think he's really moved to cover that ground. And I think that, appealing to many unhappy white workers, perhaps I think the people making the ad thought, you know what, if we put people of a mixed ethnic background in there, that's going to confuse the message that we're trying to put out to, you know, the disillusioned white workers out there. And to that, I would say, look, I think that's a mistake. I mean, if people who are, if people from a white background feel like that they have been dismissed, as obviously many people did during the US election, I don't think the answer is necessarily to whitewash what an Australian is. I think you can acknowledge the concerns of everyone by still featuring an accurate representation. So again, this isn't about tokenism. It's just simply giving an accurate representation of what an Australian citizen looks like. And of course, that's, the policy debate around whether you should be trying to emphasise jobs for Australians first is, of course, an entirely separate one. But if you are going to go down that road of saying jobs for Aussies first, just remember that not all Aussies look like that.
Mark Scott, ABC's previous managing director, seriously suggested merging ABC and SBS, doubting whether we still need a separate SBS for multicultural broadcasting, which it was set up to provide. What do you think of this?
Look, when I look at Mark Scott's speech, he was mainly emphasising merging the back office operations, which is something that you do see amongst other organisations. For example, in the business world, the likes of Westpac and Rams Home Loans, for example, they are all owned by Westpac. But the idea of bringing these different brands together under the same umbrella is that all of the back office operations can be combined. You avoid the duplication and thus save lots of money, which can then be spent on other initiatives. So obviously in the case of SBS and ABC, who are constantly searching for more money, to be frank, all news organisations are at the moment, as we've seen from Fairfax, any kind of mergers like that, can financially be a wise move. I think they have said that if they were going to do that, that all of the current programs would remain the same. So you would still have separate SBS and ABC programs to continue catering to those audiences.
Soon after becoming ABC Managing Director, Michelle Guthrie ordered a 60% increase in content makes from ethnic backgrounds. Do you think people in higher positions should actively be seeking out journalists from different backgrounds?
So the short answer is yes, but I don't think, for example, I'm wary, shall we say, about imposing quotas. Media Diversity Australia knows that this program, that this phenomenon has of a not particularly diverse workforce has been in the oven for a long time. It's reflecting changing, so you know, and it's reflected the social sentiment of our times, and now is starting to lag it, right? And so I think that you do have to make an effort to seek out people if you want to change the status quo. I think that's obvious. I think, however, that you need to be patient and intelligent and measured about the way you do it. I think that putting, you know, very hard targets on things often can become a source of resentment amongst staff. It can lead to quality issues, accusations of tokenism, which ultimately then cause a lot of this stuff to fall over.
2 weeks ago, on Anzac Day, Yasmin Abdel-Majid was hit with a wave of online criticism for a Facebook post she published stating, quote, "Lest we forget," in brackets, "Manus, Nauru, Syria, Palestine," end brackets. Soon after replacing the post with, quote, "Lest we forget," commenting, "It was brought to my attention that my last post was disrespectful, and for that, I apologise unreservedly." In a written public statement, the ABC agreed the post was disrespectful, but backed their employees' decision to delete the original post and apologise. What came out of that post was an onslaught of criticism, with the Deputy Prime Minister, Barnaby Joyce, saying the ABC should consider firing Abdel-Majid. The fire of this debate continues to burn 2 weeks after the post, with an article published on the weekend by Sydney Morning Herald, Amanda Vanstone, who writes, "Ditto if Alan Jones, Karl Stefanovic or David Koch had made similar comment. They're all men and not Muslim, but they would have copped a belting from the public. It might come as a shock to Mrs. Abdel-Majid, who nobody cares more about her being female and Muslim than she does. In fact, I suspect that nobody else gives a damn." So let's unpack this a little bit.
There's quite a lot in there.
And, you know, the conversation has continued for 2 weeks, and so a lot has already been said. But because all three men have received criticism in the past for their offensive comments, what are your thoughts on the issues Amanda Vanstone has raised in her article?
Yeah, look, I read that article. Interestingly, Amanda Vanstone has a radio program on the ABC now, which is very interesting. You could say the ABC is learning something about diversity of opinion. It has often been the target of accusations that it doesn't represent conservative views. However, just a few aspects of that. I think the obvious comparison to make is when SBS reporter Scott McIntyre also published on Anzac Day rather offensive tweets, and he was sacked the next day. So the precedent for a sacking is there. Whether or not it's the right thing. Look, this was something at Media Diversity Australia we were reluctant to weigh in on, because we can see the arguments from different sides. I would say, it's very true, right? I mean, Alan Jones, a top rating program on AM radio, found himself without sponsors for 2 weeks after he made comments a few years ago about, you know, how women in high places such as Julia Gillard were, in inverted commas, destroying the joint, right? So there's no doubt that social media tends to be an equal opportunity punisher when it comes to people making gaffes. What other aspects of that statement do you think are worthy of more discussion? It's certainly been a well-worn topic, what her future should be. I know, for example, I sort of see that Jo Hildebrand defended her right to make offensive tweets saying, look, you know, she's a public employee, you're asking her to be sacked from that. How is that different to people calling for Peter Dutton to be sacked after he makes some comments that people find offensive? So, and then others would say, well, he's an elected politician, he's expected to be opinionated, whereas she's, you know, meant to be representative of the wider Australian people. So it's a complex issue, I think, there.
Do you think that the discussion that came out of, you know, a couple of sentences was a bit overblown?
Massively overblown.
It
really was. I think that clearly, so first of all, I think it generally is accepted, especially as I think Australia has started to become more secular rather than religious in some ways, that Anzac Day has become almost a spiritual touchstone for many Australians. And so to say something on that day that, you know, many people would say dismisses the sacrifice of the, you know, serving men and women of the Australian Armed Forces over the years, because, you know, Yasmin didn't say, lest we forget Gallipoli, and then list a whole bunch of Australian military operations and then Manus Island and so forth. She only listed those. I think was always going to attract a very strong public reaction. Now, obviously, there are many that, as you'd expect for someone who's very opinionated, that's the nature of being a commentator, there will always be knives out for you from people from the other side, unfortunately. So many obviously saw that as an opportunity to go after Yasmin, I think. And also for many people that don't like the ABC, same reason. So in that respect, I think it, you know, it was clearly, you know, clearly overblown. Although I certainly do understand both sides, why people would have been offended, and also some that say, you know, hey, look, you know, any time should be a suitable time to discuss politics.
That's it from us on Fourth Estate. Thanks to my guest Kai Chow, Communications Officer for not-for-profit organisation Media Diversity Australia. Don't forget you can subscribe to the Fourth Estate podcast and be sure to leave us a review. It helps other people find us. My name's Jessica Smalley. You can catch us at the same time next week.